Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am Josh and I am joined by Bo.
Hey,
bit hoarse.
Yeah. Frogging my throat there. Pardon me.
So, what we're going to be talking about today is one step in our amazing progress in space exploration, and that is involving the James Webb Space Telescope. And I'm very excited to talk about this. I've been talking about it all week, and I've probably been annoying everyone else about how much I wanted to do this. So I'll have to contain my excitement and actually get the words out. But Bo here is also quite the expert. Well
not a true expert in any way, shape or form, but a massive fan of James Webb. Massive fan. I mean, I've been waiting for it my whole adult life. I wrote an article on it a while back. Well, at Christmas, because it launched on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. And I quite literally, without exaggeration, been waiting for that since I was a kid. And it finally arrived. And now, summer 2022, it's starting to send back images. Mm-hmm. And they're only really kind of test images, not much more than that, really, to be fair. But they're still incredible. The best thing, the best images we've ever captured, that humanity's ever.
And one of the many reasons I wanted to cover this, actually, is that we cover lots of negative events going on in the world. But this is, quite honestly, one of the most remarkable things to happen in our lifetimes. And I'm very thankful that this has happened and that I'm able to see it, because it's amazing. And I don't use that word very often. And I feel like it's certainly warranted here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's to be a lot. We're in a golden age of cosmology, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's one of those things in all of human history, whenever you think you're at the edge of the boundary of something, it's a sort of a phony peak, a fake peak, and in fact the vistas go on way bigger and longer than you thought they ever
that's
would.
A great analogy for space exploration as well.
Right, yeah. I mean, once we thought, well, anyway, yeah, you get the point. And it just seems that we knew with previous generations of very powerful Earth-based telescopes and space telescopes that we just needed a much, much better tool to see deeper into the infrared, into the deep, deep space. And well, James Webb is possibly the greatest tool that humans have ever created. Yeah, it's mind-blowing.
It's but certainly...
Just real quick to say, I did want to say this towards the beginning, you gave me a good in there about being an expert. Really, not at all. I mean, I'm just a huge fanboy. I'm a humanities man, first and foremost. You know, I did my GCSE science, got an A to C. Well, I got C. And that's it, and I stopped it there. I didn't do A-level maths, nothing. I'm a humanities, my household, I grew up in a very, you know, very deeply entrenched humanities type household. So science really isn't my thing. But as I say, I've just been a huge fanboy of it my whole life. Whereas it didn't really pique my interest when I was a kid at school, in my adult life, much more. Like fascinated by James Clerk Maxwell and the electromagnetic spectrum and what light is, what the nature of light is and all that sort of thing. And of course, James Webb is really just the pinnacle of it all, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I mean, I technically am a scientist, although some people might say our psychology is not a science. You can shut up.
So did you get an MSc? Is your master's an MSc?
It's an MRes, so it's a master's in research. Okay. But I've got a BSc, and I did do MSc work, if you will. Right. In my research, it was proper behavioural science rather than, you know, social science, all that flowery stuff. No, I did behavioural economics. It's a proper hard subject. All right.
Well,
lay off my back.
I mean, because my undergrad was a BA, but my postgrad is an MSc. It was politics.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
weird.
It's a real push to
political science. Yeah,
it's a real push. I mean, if I'm being completely honest, it's not scientific really at all. I mean, you do a bit of there is research and you do sort of data collection a bit, but it's not a real science. It's not a true science, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Political science. But anyway, let's move on.
Let's quickly go over what we're actually going to be talking about. So obviously, we're going to be talking about the images themselves, what they show, why they're interesting, what other things we can potentially see in the future. And we're also going to discuss the telescope itself, its predecessors and how it differs, and what's in store for the future of space exploration, which obviously isn't what we normally do, but I'm very excited to do it.
Yeah, I hope the audience give us a little bit of slack if we get things wrong, because in my experience, different subjects, people are more or less forgiving. And it seems that science, usually people are very, very unforgiving if you get something wrong. It's fair enough, I suppose. Like, same with my wheelhouse is history, really. You're a little bit, people are not really all that bothered if you get something ever so slightly wrong about ancient history. But World War II, if you get some insignia wrong, the World War II era, you hear about it. People won't let it go. And it's fair enough, I suppose. But so here, if I do say something that's actually fully incorrect, I do apologise. It's of course not on purpose.
I will say that I got all my information from either NASA or astrophysicists. So if the information is wrong, take it up with them. Don't shoot the messenger, all right?
Quite a lot of my knowledge comes from Richard Feynman and Carl Sagan. So take it up with them if I say something wrong.
Yeah, take it up with Carl Sagan, and see how that goes. He's no longer with us. Yeah, great inspirational characters, though. I mean, Carl Sagan's like pale blue dot speech is amazing.
Yes,
but that's where it all started. I'm not going to go into a tangent about that, but yes, I can wax lyrical about Sagan. So, what is the project itself? It's a new sort of observatory, I suppose you can call it, which is a joint project between the US, the European and the Canadian space agencies, with NASA taking the lead. And Webb has been specifically tuned to see the night sky in infrared. And I think that that's because red is the colour in the light spectrum that has the longest wavelength, and therefore... Is that right? You're making a face.
Well, no, not really. Sort of. Okay. I mean, infrared does have the longer wavelength. But it's not that like red is, although when you look at the electromagnetic spectrum, like you've got the visible light, which is quite a narrow band. And then infrared is entirely beyond that. So I think it's ever so slightly incorrect to say that sort of infrared is sort of, or that red is, it's already difficult to explain, isn't it?
I mean, I know what you're trying to say there.
Right, yeah. Infrared light is not red light.
It's its own thing, separate. Yeah,
okay, that's what I'm trying to say.
But on the visible light spectrum, red has the longest wavelength.
Okay, fine, sorry.
I just articulated it poorly because I am no physicist. Got an A in GCSE physics, though, if that counts. Something. So, yes. One of the things we don't actually have time to cover, but I want to mention before going into the images, is that the telescope was able to analyse atmospheres with this equipment, and particularly a planet orbiting very close to a star, and was able to find water levels not before seen. And the star itself is similar to our own sun, but the planet orbiting it is at about 5% of the difference that we are from our sun. So it's, 95% closer to the sun. Yeah. And yet they found an abundance of water in its atmosphere.
Seems odd, doesn't it?
Which is quite a promising thing, because that suggests that when you're looking for signs for life, if there's an abundance of water in the universe, well, then life is going to be perhaps more plentiful than we thought. And this is a solar system that's 1,000 light years away as well.
Right. Which isn't that far. Mm-hmm. Well, in the scheme of things, we'll talk about scales, I'm sure, at some point. But yeah, no, it's interesting. It's just so odd how nature, the extraordinary nature of nature. Mm-hmm. For example, I believe that in some of the craters on the far side of Mercury, there's water ice.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mercury is tidally locked to the sun, so just like the moon and the earth, one side of Mercury always faces the sun. Mm-hmm. But so the dark side of Mercury is always facing away. And in some of those craters, Mercury hasn't got any atmosphere, it's blasted away by the sun. So there's sort of permanent water ice on the far side of Mercury.
Mm.
And that, again, that sort of kind of beggars belief a bit, or it's sort of counterintuitive. How can that be?
One of the working theories of the sort of valleys and ravines on Mars is that it was once covered in water and that it had been eroded by water travelling in streams or rivers. And I find that quite a compelling explanation, having looked at the pictures, although I'm obviously not entirely sure what you're meant to be looking for, ideally, but I've seen waterbeds before and it looks relatively similar.
Oh no, on Mars, there's definitely complete abundant evidence, and NASA openly admitted that there was large bodies of water on Mars at some point. Mm-hmm. I mean, billions of years ago, a couple of billion years ago or something. So long, 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 long time ago.
Absolutely, yeah.
But nevertheless, no, absolutely. A lot of the features on Mars are caused by water erosion.
Mm-hmm.
No question.
Which is very exciting because it means that, you know, water, which, as far as we understand it, is one of the first sort of building blocks for life, is present a lot more than we previously thought, which is already a great discovery. Mm. But there is potential for more discoveries in the future, which I wanted to cover before we get onto the pictures, which obviously is the main event. But this is also really exciting stuff. So I'm going to quote NASA directly here. Infrared sensitivity will help astronomers to compare the faintest, earliest galaxies to today's grand spirals and ellipticals, helping us to understand how galaxies assemble over billions of years. So this is talking, of course, about the fact that their infrared vision could also see back about 13.5 billion years into the past by looking at distant galaxies, which will allow us to see what the galaxy looked like 13.5 billion years ago. Because, of course, it took that long for the light to reach us. So we're seeing the light which has left that galaxy, and it's almost like looking back into the past. Well, it kind of is.
Well, it definitely is. It's exactly that.
And it seems weird to say that, doesn't it? That we're able to look that far into the past. But 13.5 billion years ago, we were able to see, which is amazing. I mean, it's almost difficult to get your head around it such a long time ago.
Well, yeah, it's an absurd amount of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny because, of course, light doesn't travel instantaneously. So even my eye now, seeing you, is a fraction of a second behind the reality of you, you mm-hmm. know? Like, I hear what you're saying a fraction of a second after you've emitted the sound, you know? And so, yeah, given big enough distances, you're effectively looking back in time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, to get that far, to look that far back, maybe we should wait until we talk all about the MIRI instrument on James Webb. Mm-hmm. But the light itself has stretched across the entire cosmos, the entire universe as we know it. And so it's stretched out to, well, yeah, they think sort of 13.5, 13.8 mm-hmm. billion odd years, something like that. It's just crazy. It's so crazy to me. That it almost feels like I'm in the Truman Show, and and the directors, the producers have decided, well, let's tell him this crazy, ridiculous thing and see if he swallows it. It's almost like that to me. And yeah, but I love it. Absolutely love it.
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it? Mm. And the thing is that we've already done this. We've seen 13.5 billion years back. NASA recently released a picture, which is really too grainy to really make out what it is, but it's supposedly showing a more or less a grainy red dot of what is a solar system, I think, or a star. And it's difficult to make heads or tails of unless you're an astrophysicist, which is why I haven't included it here, because it's just a blurry dot. But yes, this is that 13.5 billion years ago that we're looking for. And this is particularly important because it's estimated that the universe is only 13.8 billion years old. So that's only 300 million years difference between the two, which in terms of the age of the universe is nothing. That's still a very young star. And supposedly, there was already evidence that a star had already gone through its life cycle, because there was evidence of the debris in which a star gives off after it dies. So gas and dust and things like that. So it suggests that these things actually took place very quickly early on. It wasn't the slow and kind of snail's pace development over time. These things, stars had already lived and died 13.5 billion years ago.
Some stars do live very short lives, what, like a million years or 10 million years, which is sort of nothing really. You know, like our sun, they think, is what, something like five or six billion years, something in that order anyway. So it's funny to think that, you know, this, the light from a star that's a 1,000 light years away, you know, is around the age of the Normans and Edward the Confessor when that light first left that star. But you go back, so if we're looking at the ultra deep field images that are 13 odd billion years ago, it's like not only had the Earth not formed, our sun hadn't formed. You know, the matter that went into create our sun, because they think our sun is maybe third, maybe even fourth generation star.
That makes sense, yeah.
And so even the matter from the generation before our sun hadn't formed into a star yet. It's just mind-blowing.
It is.
You can look back in time.
It's basically incredible. Impossible to think of things on that sort of scale accurately, isn't it? We're just simply... our brains aren't wired to think about things at that level. And it's very humbling. It's kind of the astonishment you get walking into a large cathedral, but turned up to ridiculous levels. That's how I kind of feel about it. That's all I can really say as a psychologist is, this is how the universe makes me feel.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's sort of inconceivable. You can't really comprehend it properly. I mean, you can be told the information and you can look at the images that we're going to look at and all that sort of thing, but you just can't really appreciate it. The distances, not just the time as well, but the distances involved. And the fact that men have been able to create an instrument sensitive enough to register, to pick up this ultra stretched out infrared light, it's just, it's like, it is something like magic to me. Kind of happy to be alive at this time when this
Me too.
Because James Webb may well not only just show sort of the first stars, the first galaxies, the first light, that will be sort of not its greatest achievement, potentially. Can you imagine? It may well illustrate beyond any question that there are exoplanets with life on it.
That would be a point in our existence that you could point to as one of the most significant points in our evolution as a species. I mean, you've got fire, the wheel, discovering life on other planets. Not in exactly in that order, but you know.
And James Webb may well do that. You know, the nearest instrument on it is to do spectroscopy, breaking up of light. Talk all about Newton and prisms and things if you want.
Go ahead if you want
and,
to.
Maybe when we get up to the instruments, be it, happily. But yeah, it may be able to show, like I say, really beyond any doubt that there's certain atmospheres are filled with organic life and things. So this is a bit of speculation here, but it might be quite soon. Might be within a year or two. I don't know. Because Webb, apart from everything else, it can do loads of things at once. It can literally look at hundreds of exoplanets at once, I think, maybe thousands, I don't know. But it can do all sorts of stuff all at the same time. It's, incredible.
So one of the things it can do is that it can see right through massive clouds of dust that are opaque to visible light, and observatories like the Hubble, they previously couldn't penetrate these clouds of dust. And now we can see through them as well, which is good. So we can see the things behind these massive walls of dust and see what lies behind it. Maybe there's interesting things going on that are affecting how the dust travels throughout space. There's also the ability to tell us more about the atmospheres of these extrasolar planets, as we alluded to earlier, with them looking at water. And as you alluded to, find the building blocks of life or life itself.
So we've already seen, I mean, back in, I rewatched all of Carl Sagan's Cosmos.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
I've watched it all the way through, I don't know, 4 or 5 times. Love it. Absolutely love it.
It's brilliant.
And even in that, which is sort of, it must be the very, very early 80s, I think, that came out. Maybe very late 70s. Anyway, even in that, he's saying, oh, yeah, we can see that in certain voids, because they're not true voids, but in certain voids in the cosmos, we can see they're sort of filled with organic material, you know, not life as such, but organic material, the building blocks of life.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that, well, there's evidence that there was running water on Mars. So it looks more and more likely. And even the exoplanets closest to us, like around Alpha Centauri or the TRAPPIST system, even there, it seems like there's planets perfectly in the Goldilocks zone. I think it looks more and more likely that the cosmos is filled with organic life, not necessarily intelligent life or, you know, life that's able to create technology.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps that is crazily rare, but like small single cell organisms or even smaller proteins and things, it might be everywhere almost. Well, not everywhere, but you know, a lot of stars will have planets in the Goldilocks zone. A lot of them may well be green.
Just to clarify, the Goldilocks zone is the sort of band or the distance away from a sun that is the sort of sweet spot.
Not too hot, not too cold.
Exactly.
Yes.
Obviously, after the Goldilocks porridge.
Yeah. So you mentioned Hubble there. So one of the things I'd like to say, if people don't know about James Webb, is that it's an infrared telescope. So right away you have to talk about the electromagnetic spectrum and what the electromagnetic fields are. And so Hubble was mainly an optical space telescope. It is able to look a little bit in the ultraviolet and the infrared, a little bit, but it's mainly, almost entirely really, in looking at the optical, the visual, visible light. And it was James Clerk Maxwell in sort of the high Victorian times when they sort of realised that electrics and magnets are profoundly connected. There isn't really electrics and magnets. There's just electromagnetism. It's some part of the same thing. And I absolutely don't understand it, but James Clerk Maxwell put these in sort of, I'm told, very elegant equations. Again, it's gobbledygook to me. I just simply don't understand it. But he was able to describe it very well. We don't know what it is. There's great clips you can find of Richard Feynman, someone asking him, what is magnetism? What is that for something? And he's like, I can't explain it. I can't tell you what it is. We can describe it and we can measure it like to crazily accurate levels. But what it actually is, we don't know. A bit like gravity. Newton described gravity very, very well. And Einstein, you know, described it even better. Mm-hmm. But what it actually is, we still don't know. We've got no idea.
They sort of described to personify its behaviours, but not what it is I don't want to call it an entity because that indicates it has mass, which it doesn't, but you know what I mean.
Or why it is. Why is there gravity? Why is there electromagnetism? No one knows still. Anyways. So
very exciting questions that we could potentially answer, presumably, though.
Well, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. All of that is completely beyond my ken. But so just to mention about the electromagnetic spectrum. So the idea that you've got at one end of the spectrum extremely long stretched out waves. You sort of got radio waves, sort of the longest, most stretched out, and then you've got microwaves, then the infrared, then the visible light, and then you get more shorter waves, more energetic,
sort of ultraviolet,
yeah. And then you've got x-rays, and at the end sort of gamma rays that, you know, terribly dangerous, will rip your atoms apart if they're fired through you, you know. Whereas, you know, like radio waves or microwaves pass straight through, don't realise they're not dangerous particularly. But even ultraviolet light, I mean, even the light from our sun, it's the ultraviolet that's is dangerous to us.
It's what gives you like sunburns, isn't it?
Right, yeah. And skin cancer in the end, I suppose. And so, without going into it too much, because I suppose you would need a whole lecture all about Newton and the nature of light and James Clerk Maxwell to really do it justice. But basically, infrared light is a longer wavelength. And the thing that Richard Feynman says, which is fascinating, is that visible light is just one small bit of the electromagnetic spectrum. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like it's radiation. Visible light is just another form of radiation, just like gamma rays or radio waves. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. It's just the frequency is different. And, you know, it's difficult to get your mind around the idea that the light from these lights or from the sun mm-hmm. is quite literally exactly the same thing as gamma rays or x-rays. It's the same thing.
I think one way people could get their head around it is that there are lots of images that have circulated online of what certain animals perceive in terms of what parts of the light spectrum they see, and then they create like a depiction of what they would see. So I've seen like insects or certain animals that can see different colours that we can't see in things, and it's quite a compelling way of getting your head around the idea that actually you see a very thin sliver of light, and it's only very narrow in the vast kind of scheme of things.
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, one of the examples, I was just listening to the fireman lecture, he was talking about a pit viper. Apparently pit vipers can see more in the infrared slightly. And so they can sort of essentially see this sort of, they can see the heat from things in essence. I mean, heat is just what we call hot and cold. It's just how much the atoms are jiggling around, really. And anyway, so they can sort of see like the predator, you know, they can see heat. So they can see the heat from a mouse, you know. That's the idea for like a pit viper sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and so our eye, the human eye, obviously a tiny little aperture, we only see a very sort of small slither of light. One of the things that Newton did was they didn't know exactly what light was made up of exactly. They didn't understand. And you can take a shaft of light, pass it through a prism, and it will split out into the colours of the rainbow.
Which is like the Pink Floyd album cover.
Right, yeah, exactly that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then what Newton did, because they weren't sure really what was going on or what they were looking at. And so Newton did that, and then he tried to split up the individual colours, like just take the orange from that rainbow and try and split that, and realised you couldn't. Mm-hmm. So what he realised was that white light, so-called white light, is in fact made up of all the colours of the rainbow. But he realised you couldn't split it down any further. So those individual colours must be sort of the fundamental part of that light in the spectrum. Anyway, all these principles are still used even in James Webb. I mean, one of the instruments that for one of the cameras or imaging instruments. It still does that. It breaks down all the light into all the different colours and takes an image, essentially, of each one and then puts them all together. And we end up with great images with all sorts of amazing colours on it. But even that first experiment that Newton did, splitting with just a simple prism, splitting the light, it's still as fundamental as it gets, really, for us. The nature of what light is, is fascinating, because it seems like a really simple question. Like, surely we know everything about it already. Well, not exactly. There's still quite a lot of mysteries around, well, all sorts of things. I mean, our cosmos is just filled with mystery, isn't it? And although James Webb, you know, will help us to be a little less mystified, it actually raises even more questions sometimes.
Yeah, it might even make there more questions to be answered, which is quite often the case, isn't it? And talking of answering questions, let's have a look at Stefan's quintet that we have on screen now. So I've got these images in no particular order, by the way. They're more or less in a random order, just to clarify. It's not the order in which they were released or their distance or anything like that. But this galaxy group, as you can see by the bright lights, they're unmistakable. This galaxy group is known as Stefan's quintet. And of course, quintet is referring to the fact there are five. So you might be saying, well, I can only see four blobs of light here. Where's the fifth one? Well, one of those, if the one sort of in the centre of the image, you can actually, if you look more closely, you can see that there are actually two galaxies there caught in each other's orbit, and they're in the process of merging together. So it's also worth mentioning that this image of Stefan's quintet is the largest image out of Webb's to date, and it would cover about 1/5 of the moon's diameter in size, if the image was full resolution.
Right.
It also contains 150 million pixels in it and is constructed from about 1,000 separate image files. So this is the product of a lot of hard work here. And it's certainly worth it, isn't it? It's truly beautiful. The colours, the shapes, the complexity.
Yeah. The majesty of the heavens. It's almost, words can't do it justice, can they, almost?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it makes you realise we're just sort of just a tiny mote of dust in the cosmic ocean.
It's certainly a humbling thing to look at pictures of space, isn't it? Because it reminds you of the sense of scale of the universe, and then to think of yourself as anything too significant is to be incredibly naive.
And one thing you said there, it represents a lot of work. I mean, not just the teams which constructed, built, designed and built Webb, but really it's a culmination of our entire civilization.
Absolutely,
in a way, isn't it? It's a culmination of the human endeavour to try and understand things. You know, without Johannes Kepler, we wouldn't have this. Without Newton, we wouldn't have this. Without Aristarchus of Samos, we wouldn't have this. You know, without all sorts of, the entire sweep of human civilization. This is the pinnacle of it, with standing on the shoulders of giants, of which the James Webb team is just the most recent incarnation of.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all humanity can be, is something sort of rightly to be proud of in a way. If the wokists sort of insist we feel guilty for the crimes of our ancestors, can we at least feel proud for the achievements of our ancestors?
And this is certainly one of them, yeah. Right. And it's also worth mentioning that this galaxy group is also one of the more compact galaxy groups ever discovered, and I think it is the most compact. Normally, galaxies aren't so close together. So this group is actually visible in the northern hemisphere of planet Earth, in the Pegasus constellation, So it's been known for many years, and in fact, it was one of the 48 constellations listed by the 2nd century astronomer Ptolemy. A bit of history for you, I know.
Yeah, so there's many Ptolemies. The astronomer Ptolemy is different to Alexander's captain.
There were many Ptolemies,
Ptolemy Sota. It's funny because actually there's, if you look enough in the night sky, and of course astronomers have, you can find galaxies in every different configuration of smashing into each other. The fact that maybe there's five together might be a little unusual, but it's also quite often star clusters or galaxy clusters even. It's difficult to appreciate how far away they are. Like, one of those might be a lot closer than the others.
Well, it's funny you say that. The brightest member of the group is NGC 7320, which doesn't mean much to most people, but it's the one in the top left-hand side of the image. It's that one that's the most close to us, which is about 40 million light years away. And of course, one light year being 6 trillion miles, or 9 trillion kilometers. So, I mean, we say it's close, but by our own standards of what is close, it's about as far away as you can possibly conceive of.
Yeah, I mean, 40 million light years. I mean, so the light left that galaxy. The dinosaurs had were extinct back when they sort of 65 million years, they say, about the dinosaurs. Nevertheless, the Earth just would have been so very, very, very different at that point.
We certainly wouldn't have existed, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, no, nowhere near. There were really early mammals, little shrew-type mammal creatures. That's the only mammals that...
It'd be our distant ancestors, I imagine.
Yeah.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.